before they...
What is nothing?
Now that's deep.
What in the fuck are we doing here?
Free socks. What is something?
That's deep, bro. Dudes, ultimate bros, the ultimates of my life. What are you guys doing? How's your week been? I'm so glad to be here with you. My apologies for not getting out an episode to you last week. I shot my pilot, for True TV with my husband. It's based on my other show, Your Mom's House. And man, that's a lot of work that goes into making a television show. It's a lot of preparation. It's weeks and weeks of writing and planning, months and months, rather. And yeah, sorry, guys. It was a little cray-cray. You know, you shoot for like 13 hours a day, like for 4 days. It was really, really crazy. We're still recovering from it. The house is just upside down. There's nothing but pots and pans, filthy pizza boxes, because we're too tired to cook at the end of the day when we get home. But I'm back. And if you can hear that in the background, if you listen, what's that? It's the sound of no puppies whining. Our new addition, Bitsy, has finally calmed into our home. And it's finally all coming together, you guys. It's all coming together. Boy, that first week of having a puppy, that is like, I forgot how horrible it is to have a new puppy. it is an adjustment, boy. They're just terrible, aren't they? God. Well, maybe just ours. Our puppy's the worst. Well, it was until a few days ago. Now it's calming down, but what an adjustment, man. All they do is shit and piss everywhere and cry. A lot of whining and then a lot of peeing and pooping on stuff. So there you go. Life is back. I'm so excited to be back with you. I have so many deep, rad thoughts to kind of go through with you today. But before that, let's start by plugging. I got some plugs. If you listen to Your Mom's House, if you are a fan of Your Mom's House, my husband and I will be doing Your Mom's House live June 6th at the Ice House in Pasadena. That is this Saturday, June 6th, in the small room at 7:30 p.m. show. So that way, like, you can have a life after the podcast. It's not like, I hate when comedy shows start at like 10:30 or 11, you know, because then you're like, by the time I get here, it's like 1 in the morning. What am I going to, it's too late, you know? I gotta be in bed by 11. I gotta watch what is that sound now? Oh my God, I'm terrified. These dogs are tearing my house apart now. I gotta watch these home design shows. I gotta watch the Property Brothers. I gotta figure out what tile backsplash I want on the future home maybe we'll own someday. All that important. That's why we do 7:30 show. Also, June 18th through 21st, I will be at the Denver Improv. That's in Denver, Colorado, not Denver, Ohio, in case you were wondering. And you know what? I need someone to tape my sets, guys. You know what? I'll put the call out there. A lot of you guys do stuff for a living. A lot of you, maybe you know a good videographer. Is that what they're called now? That can shoot my sets and give me digital copies so that I can, you know, use them for whatever. Not for like airing, just for me. So yeah, if anyone out there knows somebody that can do that, hook a sister up, please. Also, Amazon. I know you shop on it. You should. It will change your life if you do not already. I order something from Amazon Prime pretty much every day because it shows up like in 24 hours. It's the best. It's ruined my life because I don't go outside anymore unless I absolutely have to, which feels really good to me. Why go outside when I can do Amazon Prime? Also, holy crap, big news, guys, big news. That's Deep Bro has picked up our first official sponsor. That's right. We are finally a podcast with big time sponsors, and the sponsor is Sattva Mattress Company, and they are at smarterbed.com. And if you've listened to Your Mom's House, you know that my husband and I, we sleep on a Sattva mattress. And I don't say this like, you know, when they do endorsements, podcasters, and they get sent a free mattress. No, boo-boos. Listen up. I ordered a Sattva mattress for us about a year ago, and my husband and I fell in love with this bed for so many reasons. I reached out to them and begged them for the opportunity to speak about their products on Your Mom's House. And I absolutely love this mattress. I'll tell you why. Number one, it's cheaper, but that doesn't mean that it's cheaper in quality. And the reason it's less expensive than these bullshit mattress stores is because they have only an online store. They don't have an actual retail space that they spend a fortune on rent. There's no uptight a salesman attacking you. Isn't that the worst when you go into any store and you're like, bro, let me just do this, man. Let me just send on some mattresses. Can I just take my time? And they're sharking you. There's none of that. In fact, this mattress that we sleep on that we adore is comparable to any fancy highfalutin mattress you have slept on. And it's a fraction of a cost. I'll tell you what, mattresses that cost $2,000 in retail, guess what it costs in Sattva? $899. Believe that. Their customer service is outstanding within seconds. And I mean it, like seconds. You hit order online when you order this thing. Somebody calls you. A human being calls you, talks you through what's about to happen so that you're not nervous. And they don't just drop off like a box on your doorstep day of delivery. It's not like that where you have to unwrap it and it smells like god-awful plastic. No, they actually install this thing for you. These nice gentlemen show up at your home, they install the mattress, and they'll take away your old mattress, which was great because ours was supremely disgusting. Yeah, it's a luxury product. You're going to love it. It's made with bio-based foam that is shipped stable and will never off-gas in your home. I guess that's what that word is. Mattresses are hypoallergenic, eco-friendly. There's no toxins or formaldehyde or solutions or processed chemicals. You know when you smell that when you go into those mattress stores? Oh, it's the most disgusting thing. Anyway, you're going to have an amazing night's sleep. I guarantee it. And the best part is it's a no-risk trial, 75 days in your home. Try it. You don't like it? Send it back. It's just that simple. Okay. You're going to have a great night's sleep. Trust me. Okay. I'm telling you, I love it. Go to smarterbed.com. That is smarterbed.com. Smarterbed.com. Sattva. Sattva. I promise you. Was that enough? Are you tired? I'm overwhelmed. Okay, you guys. I have such a great episode in store for you today. I've been really thinking about it, what I want to talk about, and I've got some great emails to go over. But I'm going to play the song first. This might give you a little hinty hint as to what the topic will be. Well, you already know because it's probably written in the subject of this podcast. God damn, you guys were always one step ahead of me.
We'll be right back.
goes, guys. Isolation. Oh, I love that song. That's Joy Division. Man, this was like my theme song in high school. I think I actually wanted to use a quote from this song as my senior quote and then thought better of it. you don't want a bummer ass Joy Division quote as your lasting senior quote. I actually ended up going with a Chameleons quote, another goth fan. That was depressing, but wow, what a line. There's that great line, Mother, I've tried, please believe me. I'm doing the best that I can. I'm ashamed of the things I've been put through. I'm ashamed of the person I am. Wow. That is deep, bro, huh? That almost made me cry just saying that out loud. That is like a, well, that sounds like a lyric written by somebody who killed themselves. Ian Curtis, the guy that wrote that, actually did kill himself when he was only 24 years old or something like that, 23 or 24, very young when he committed suicide. He was in a lot of pain. He had seizures. He was a, not a diabetic. What is that called when you have seizures in your brain and all that crap? How come I can't remember words the minute I turn the microphone on? I'll remember the word later, but he had seizures and he was miserable. And he killed himself and he wrote the song before he did. And I think it really encapsulates the feeling of isolation. But before that, I gotta read these emails you guys sent. They're so great, man. They're so great. So the topic is isolation today. But before that, this is so good. This is John from North Dakota. He writes, The other day, my 9-year-old daughter asked me, what's the meaning of life? I gave her a long, boring answer, then asked what she thought. She first said, my answer is weird and I don't want to say it. I told her, it's okay, honey. So she went on to say she likes to make money, but she doesn't know why. She doesn't know what she wants money for. She just likes the excitement of making money. Not sure why, but I thought that was a pretty deep bro. Hilarious. Hilarious. There you go. That's right. How come this kid got the meaning of life before I did? I think she's right. You know, here I am like an idiot believing all the stuff that I learned in you know, Christian school. I believed all the myths, you know, like the meek shall inherit the earth and it is far better to give than to receive and, you know, be a good person and turn the other cheek. I believed all that crap. Boy, have I had to unlearn all that to function in the real world, right? She's right. The excitement of making money. And then I got this other, this is a great one too. Let me see if I have the person who wrote it. Oh, this guy's name is Ben. I really like this. He goes, one of the most important pieces of knowledge that the corporate world ever gave me has to be the Pareto principle, aka the 80-20 rule. Yeah, this principle is cited in like a lot of those you know, books that tell you how, like the 4-hour work week and stuff like that. I like this principle. I dig it. It goes, the Pareto principle, for many events, roughly 80% of the effects come from 20% of the causes. So he goes on to write, while I spent years working and applying this principle to many project delivery, 80% of the work will take 20% of the overall project, while the last 20% of the work, the fine tuning, will take 80% of the time. Oh my God, that's a lot of math. Only a few years ago did I see the positive application of this principle to my personal life and growth. So how did I start to apply this principle to my own life? I started to see how much time I was spending on things/activities I did. Where do I spend my time in a day and to what end? Are they important things or busy work? Ooh, it's a good question. When you start doing that inventory, you realize just how much time you spend on stupid shit. Does it make sense to me to spend 3 hours on yard work when I can make it look decent and acceptable in about an hour? How many people will pass by and say, geez, his trimming skills is really lacking. And why the fuck should I care? Is the yard done? Yes. Does it look good? Yes. Does it look perfect? No. Will it give me more joy to spend the next 4 hours polishing the rest? To me, no. Then on to the next thing. I can clean my house and make it look good and fresh in 4 hours, but I could spend a full day and it's spotless. Should I spend that extra time to make it From Good to Spotless. When was the last time you just threw your craft dinner on the floor to play? I bet you can't guess what I stepped in today. I don't understand that. Will it bring me joy to see my reflection off the kitchen sink? Probably not. The point is, Pareto would say it often would take you 4 times the effort to get something from 80% done to perfect. But is 80% enough to be good? Here's the trap, though. One might start cutting corners and slacking off, but that's not the point. The point is that applying the Pareto principle to multiple lesser important activities that will not improve your life, if you strive for perfection, you create time for the more important stuff. We need more time for these few and deeply important projects because they are the ones that give you joy during the journey to perfection, the grind as we sometimes refer to. Time is not a renewable resource, and worse, we have no clue what our balance is. So true, bro. So true. Yeah, I agree. I love this idea of like I do the same thing. It's funny. I don't take pride in doing dishes. I don't take pride in a clean home. I don't take pride in the yard. I don't see trash. It's funny. Since I was a kid, I don't see stuff that maybe to another person it would bother them. I just don't give a fuck. And I think in not giving a shit about the mediocre, the small things, you do get to have like a bigger picture of life. And I see that a lot in women. I think there's a lot of pressure on us to be, you know, house proud, to be perfect mothers, to be perfect homemakers, And now it's weird. It's like this need for perfection in our appearances is really insidious, really insidious. It's funny because I was looking at Kim Gordon's Instagram account, like I always do every day, and there's this picture she posted yesterday of this girl like at her concert in the front row. There's just like this normal looking girl, like brown hair, ponytail. And she's wearing this shirt that says "Models suck." And I was like, yeah, remember that? Do you remember that time in the 90s when people kind of understood that like the really pretty people, that was their job? Like supermodels like Christy Turlington, Cindy Crawford, all these people we grew up with, like that's their job. To be hot, and that doesn't apply to the rest of us. And it's totally okay to not be a Christy Turlington or a Cindy Crawford. And now it's completely flipped where, you know, the Kardashians, the hot people were expected to not only emulate, but look exactly like. There is no sense of us versus them anymore. You know, it's so funny. I see it when I obviously don't hang out with many younger people just because I'm, you know, boring, married person. But when I do go out to the clubs, the comedy store or wherever, and I see people showing up, I look at the audience and it's so like, wow, the girls are really putting forth the effort to be like super, super, super hot. And it's just, I'm just saying, and not that there's anything wrong with that either. It's a huge change from when I was growing up and coming up, you could look different. You know, you could look weird and that was considered a thing. So, hey man, thanks for this email, Ben. Really good point. Really good point. For perfection is the key to suffering, I tell you. Trying to achieve perfection in anything. Just do where you belong. You know, like I have a cousin who she's also one of these perfection people. You know, our house is perfect. The kid's perfect. She owns everything. Every knickknack has a doily. There's a million toys for this kid. There's a million mugs. There's a million. Just she owns everything of everything. You know those people. She rejoices when the new Forever 21 is opened in the neighborhood, just stuff like you know, and I know what that is. That's covering a crippling fear that someone will figure out that she's not perfect, that it's not perfect, that maybe I'm out of control. And I tell you, I look a lot at dudes. I've watched dudes, and I tell you, man, you don't see many dudes apologizing for how messy their house looks or how imperfect their lives or bodies or whatever's are. I stopped apologizing long ago, and it's really liberating. It feels great. I'm over it. I'm done apologizing for not being perfect. It's fucking exhausting. It is exhausting, man. It is exhausting. I'm always going to be 10 pounds heavier than I should be, and my house is always going to be a slovenly mess. Sorry. That's why I hire a lady to come once a week to deal with my mess. I'm telling you, $50 really buys you a lot. But it buys you peace of mind. If you can afford a maid, please do. God, help. Do yourself a favor. And a gardener, it sounds like, if you're doing your housework. Fuck that. Jesus Christ. All right. Here we go. Isolation. This is the email that broke my heart, and I swear to God, I almost cried when I read it, and really led me to think about this topic. I've been thinking about it now for a couple weeks and how to do it. So I'll go ahead and I'll read it now. Let me see if this guy says I can. Yeah, I can use your name. Okay, this comes from Cameron. He goes, "Hey, Mommy Pajinski. I'm a huge fan of both your mom's house and That's Deep, Bro. Your shows keep me sane while working at my boring corporate job. I've been thinking quite a bit about the concept of isolation and how to cope with it. I'm guessing most people go through periods in their lives where they feel completely alone. To give you some background, I'm a gay Mormon, and I've never felt like I belong to the church community or the gay community. Recently, I graduated from BYU, and all my friends are getting married, moving, and churning out babies. BYU students breed like rabbits, and anyone who isn't married by the time they graduate is considered to be a delinquent. Slap a gut-wrenching 6-month-long breakup with the first guy I ever loved, and I'm feeling like the whole world has moved on and left me behind. So how do people cope with loneliness? I'm all for this week's episode on expecting the unexpected, but what about expecting the exact same boring shit every day?" Keep it deep, bro. Cameron. Well, Cameron, thank you for sending this email, and wow, bro, I feel you. And also, unexpected, the unexpected, I think that was what I was trying to say, and maybe I didn't convey it, that if you do expect the same boring shit every damn day, that is exactly what you will receive, is the same boring shit every damn day. So I think when you start looking for the unexpected, when you look for different corners and avenues, is when you sometimes will find it. So obviously there's a bigger topic in here, but let's address the particulars. First of all, you live in Salt Lake City, Utah, with a bunch of fucking Mormons. What are you doing? You gotta get out. Get the fuck out of Salt Lake City. First things first. So here's why I say that, because you know, you're not always born and you're not always raised in the place you are meant to be born or raised in. You know what I'm saying? Like, most of us are not born lucky enough to be born in the place we belong. And I firmly believe in finding your tribe. That is of the utmost importance as a human being. You must find your tribe. You must find where you belong. And that is like a demographic thing, dude. It's like, it's even in Los Angeles, in this fucking huge city of Los Angeles. There are so many neighborhoods, and it chafes my anus when people say, "Oh, LA, I hate it." You hate it. You hate everything because there's so many different neighborhoods. You can live with hipsters. You can live with gay dudes. You can live by the beach. You can live in the middle of the city with homeless guys taking dumps in alleyways. You can live in the suburbs. You can live, you know, in an igloo, in a park. Like, there's so many different lanes to be in. And I think, and I understand what you're saying. You're gay and Mormon. Oh, my dogs are attacking something. Gay and Mormon. I mean, I don't know if those two are mutually exclusive. I, I don't know how that works, and I'm sorry, I'm a bit ignorant on Mormons and gays. I'm assuming they're not. I'm assuming that they're kind of incompatible. But I don't know. I think you may have to choose between the two, bro. I think you may have to make a decision. It sounds like you're a young guy because you just graduated. And let me tell you, graduating from college is traumatic enough. Slap on the breakup, and that is terrible. Also, it sounds like you're newly entering in the gay community. And may I recommend Dan Savage's podcast, the Savage Love Cast. He is an older gay guy. He's got a husband and a kid, and he speaks at large. He speaks volumes to what exactly you're writing about, feeling isolated, being probably in the wrong place for you right now. But what he would say to you, get the fuck out of Salt Lake City. Go find your tribe. Go to San Francisco. There's nothing but gay dudes who are awesome. And I know what you're saying. Maybe in your communities, the gay community is not your style. But get the fuck out. Go now. You've graduated. Leave. Or just, I don't know, find other gay people in your city. Okay. Bigger picture. Here we go. Concept of isolation and how to cope with it. How do you cope with loneliness? Man, I tell you, I could write a book about that one. Well, you know, as somebody that grew up really isolated, I grew up with a, as I've said this before, if you don't know my background, my mother is mentally ill. She has a borderline personality disorder, now paranoid schizophrenic. My parents divorced. I lived alone with a crazy mom. And I did see my dad on weekends and such, but, you know, both my parents were foreigners too. So add that on top of the home life. And it was very isolating because I couldn't go to school and kind of explain that to people. It's not something I even had a vocabulary to share. And I was very lonely and very isolated for many, many years. And it's something I still struggle with as an adult. I struggle with, you know, wanting to connect with people versus the comfort of just kind of hanging out alone, which is something I that is unfortunately my comfort zone. So, not unfortunately, because solitude isn't an inherently bad thing. It's when solitude turns to isolation that it becomes bad. That's what my therapist says. Apparently, solitude is good. And then around day three, you're supposed to hang out with people. And I can say that around day three is when I start to want to talk to people. So I think I'm all right now. But yes, everybody goes through, I believe, a period of severe isolation. I think mine was when I was an adolescent, when I was 14 and lost my mind. And I was really depressed as a teenager. But then again, at 26, you know, a new adult, I had just been fired from some job and I was on unemployment. I was taking an unemployment vacation and I decided that I was going to sit in my apartment for 2 weeks or so and just play Puzzle Bobble, a Japanese video game. And I got stuck. I don't know if you've ever had that where you just kind of stuck. Like, I didn't know how to go forward. I didn't know what to do with myself. All I knew is that I would watch that Roger Lodge show, Blind Date, at around 6 o'clock. That would come on and that would give me some marker of time. I would wake up, I would eat cereal, and I would play Puzzle Bobble all day. And I had this neighbor who caught on that I wasn't leaving the house, and she caught me checking the mail, and this older lady, and she goes, you know, it's not healthy to stay inside all day. And here I had thought that nobody was on to me, that I was isolating, but she knew. And it did take someone else to kind of jar me out of it. It took an old lady to tell me that I was behaving absurdly. And I did snap out of it. And that is when I started really getting heavier into stand-up comedy. Again, I found my tribe. And that is the thing you have to do. You have to reach out. You have to find, at least for you, my friend Cameron, some other people that you do identify with. Otherwise, that's bad. No, there's also, there's two kinds of isolation, right? Well, there's emotional isolation and there's social isolation. And then there's solitude. So I have some great quotes. Let's start there. This is a great one. Wait, hold on, hold on. Hi, this is not, this is kind of random. This is from Kurt Cobain. He goes, "I don't care what you think unless it's about me." That's good. Anais Nin said, "I have such a fear of finding another like myself and such a desire to find one. I am so utterly lonely, but I also have such a fear that my isolation be broken through and I no longer be the head and ruler of my universe." I kind of get that one, right? I think on the one hand, when you're super lonely and isolated, you yearn to be understood, and but the other side of you goes, yeah, but it's safe. It's safe in this ridiculous world that I have built up for myself. And then there's this great quote by Kath Crowley. I don't know who that is. A Little Wanted Song is the title. She writes, "You're always saying people don't like you, but people can't like something that's not there." Yeah, that's pretty good. So there's solitude. And I think solitude, we can all agree, is a pretty noble thing. And I, you know, I think if you can't do solitude, something's wrong with you on the other spectrum. Here we go. "Solitude," wrote Jacques Maritain, a philosopher, "is the flower of life in community. True solitude is the contemplation of the true, the good, and the beautiful. And such solitude is essential to maintaining communities of friendship oriented towards non-quantifiable goods." Now that's interesting, because I think my sense is that our society is set up, modern society, contemporary society, not modern, contemporary society is set up such that we are isolated. Especially in the United States, capitalism is kind of set up to keep us separate and using each other for our benefits. There's that rugged individualism ethic. I think that kind of starts, that's kind of where it starts. So it's kind of like modern society gives us the freedom from interfering with one another, right? to see the other as useful to us, as opposed to loving one another for the sake of loving, right? You have a society right now in which people are kind of pursuing their own ends and using other people as tools to achieve that. You know, like, it's like show business is a perfect metaphor for this. When you meet somebody, it's always like, well, what can they do for me? Well, really chaps my ass, by the way, in American culture, it's like when you meet somebody, the first question out of their mouth is, and what do you do for a living? Which I always want to reply, none of your goddamn business, because what do you do for a living implies many things. It implies, you know, how much money do you make? Do you do something that could be of value to me? It's kind of like somebody else's way of categorizing you and putting you in a place that, like, they're filing you away as useful or not useful, which is horrifying. So American society, particularly in capitalism, we're kind of set up to be isolated, to be these, quote, rugged individuals, because now the state, I guess, I don't know what the better word for that, but the state, yes, does for you what historically people did for each other. We are societally set up for isolation in a certain sense. I think the sense of community is broken down so much, and that has its roots in, if you've ever read John Locke? Locke and Hobbes. I remember reading these guys in political philosophy. And I think if you ever want to know some interesting shit about political philosophy, there's Locke. Hold on. There's two English philosophers, John Locke and Thomas Hobbes. And those bros were very deep. And they ended up writing a bunch of stuff that we Americans based our constitution on. A lot of people think that the idea of pursuing life, liberty, and happiness was kind of inherent, and that's not really true. It originally started as John Locke wrote, "We have a right to life, liberty, and property, preservation of the natural rights to life, liberty, and property." It was claimed as one of the big reasons why we rebelled, well, the American colonies rebelled. It wasn't the pursuit of happiness why the American colonies rebelled against English. It was really to have the right to own our own shit, right? The idea of stay away from me, bros. This is my piece of land and that is yours. And, don't fuck with me. Leave me alone. So, right, life, everyone is entitled to live once they are created. Liberty, everyone's entitled to do anything they want to, so long as it doesn't conflict with the first right. So isn't that interesting? Everyone's entitled to anything they want to, so long as it doesn't conflict with the first right, someone else's right to live. It's like, you do you, bro, I do me, right? and property. Everyone's entitled to own all they create or gain through gift or trade, so long as it doesn't conflict with the first two rights. And that's a really interesting idea, to think that the foundation of American society is based on life, liberty, and owning stuff. Happiness comes much later. Thomas Jefferson substituted the pursuit of happiness in place of property in the United States Declaration of Independence. But prior to that, the founding fathers just wanted to be left the fuck alone. And that's a very American ideal, isn't it? You know, the rugged cowboy, the rugged individual, leave me alone, man. I just want to do my shit. You do your shit. I do mine. Leave me the fuck alone. That's very much a piece of who we are. And another idea, which is really interesting and has always stuck with me, is Thomas Hobbes. He wrote a book called, he wrote many books, I'm sure, but the book Leviathan. I don't know if you ever read that one. But Leviathan is interesting because, well, for many reasons, but it starts with the idea that the sovereign, whoever we allow to rule us, is made up of the people, right? It's constituted of the people. And as people, we bestow the right of ruling upon the sovereign. It's a social contract, right? We need the sovereign, and the sovereign needs us. And because without the sovereign, life as we know it, as human beings, the state of nature is what they call this. The state of nature means life before somebody ruling us. Life, what life would be like, let's say, if we didn't have kings or governments and stuff. And Hobbes believed that the state of nature, the inherent state of man, is pretty gnarly. He wrote, without the Leviathan, life would be, quote, nasty, brutish, and short. I love that. Nasty, brutish, and short. That is essentially what human beings are at their core. The state of nature is bad. Humans need to be governed and restrained. And that is why we have governments, right? To restrain us. That's so fucked up. I don't know. Partially true, though. I mean, when you think about it, right? Do you trust most people? I gotta tell you, I love the idea of a philosopher king. I don't know, who was it? Aristotle. Who wanted to have, they believed that the Greeks, I believe, did, wanted to raise like someone from childhood to just be outside of society, kind of like a hermit. And they would just infuse this child with knowledge of politics and philosophy and art and literature and all things wonderful. And they would be raised outside of society. And then once they were of age, they would be placed as the philosopher king, the ruler of all people. And I've always loved that idea. I don't know why that's considered bad. I don't, why not? You know, I don't trust most of Americans to vote. Do you? Fuck no. I don't trust that at all. So there we go. That's, that is one side of it. On the one hand, we are isolated through the very nature and structure of our government and just how we function. But isolation, solitude is one thing, right? That's kind of a voluntary condition, but isolation is different. It's pretty rough. here. I found this great essay on isolation. This is in a bigger political context. We'll get to the emotional stuff in a minute. But, okay, no man is an island, wrote Dunn, John Dunn. But now we are all islands. That is the meaning of the word isolation, which has nothing to do etymologically or existentially with solitude. Okay. The point being, isolation, literally island making, is altogether different. If we say, because there's no transcendent good, we must each pursue what looks appealing to us so long as we remain within the law. That's what I was referring to here. The idea that everybody's out getting their own. And as long as you follow the rules, everything's cool. And that does lend itself to a deep sense of isolation. Here even, it's funny, he has this, who wrote this? Anthony Esselin wrote this essay, Solitude and Political Friendship. He writes about parties. Hold on a second. There is this great, anyway, there's this great line in his essay where he writes about when you're at a party, even the social becomes useful. In other words, like when you go to a party, oh, here. Here we go. The profound loneliness that settles upon young people drinking at a party when there is nothing to celebrate, as they warily circle about one another, checking one another out, reckoning and being reckoned. It should be obvious that what is quantifiable is by its very nature finite, and therefore, since man is never satisfied by the finite, felt as scarce. This is the pursuit of such fleeting goods. It's almost as though he's saying, like, when you're at a party, we're all here to pursue fun. Isn't this great? Everything's useful. Everything's fun. And you're never really participating. And that is very isolating as well. All right. So in psychology, too, there's a few things. There's emotional isolation and social isolation. And emotional isolation is a little different. And it's just so funny. I looked in Wikipedia about it. And I think everybody at some point has had emotional isolation. But here's Wikipedia's definition. This made me laugh. Emotional isolation is a state of isolation where one may have a well-functioning social network, but still feels emotionally separate from others. Population-based research indicates that 1 in 5 middle-aged and elderly men in Sweden are emotionally isolated. Of those who do have someone in whom they can confide, 8 out of 10 confide only in their partner. People who have no one in whom to confide are less likely to feel alert and strong, calm and happy. Instead, they feel depressed, sad, tired, and worn out. So that's the definition of emotional isolation, is when you have no one in whom to confide. You know, most of us, if you're married, you have your one partner that you do that, but you should have other friends, I guess is the point, right? But hey, emotional isolation also happens when, if you've ever been in a crappy relationship. I remember the relationship I was in before my husband, towards the end there. Boy, towards the end of any relationship, that is the worst. Because you're kind of living with this other person, but you're already separated from them emotionally. And that is horrible. I mean, you know, lots of people do that. Lots of people live in crummy relationships. We've all fucking been there. That is the worst. Emotional isolation. And that's also cutting yourself off kind of from other people. There's a lot of people that can't tolerate intimate relationships. My mother being one of those people, she's very emotionally isolated. That's fucking for sure. And that's depressing. You don't want to be that person, man. Hold on. Let me look something up here. I found something good to read. Emotional isolation. God, I don't even think my mother has friends anymore. Oh, okay. Here it is. Here it is. That's social. Why do people emotionally isolate? This is funny. Because I'm guilty of I socially isolate. Sorry. But it says emotional isolation involves withdrawal from other people, meaning we keep our feelings to ourselves completely. We are unable to receive emotional support from others. We shut down or feel numb, and we cannot or do not communicate with others, except perhaps for the most superficial matters. For example, you know, close the door, shut the light, and leave me alone. Yikes. So that can be a scary place. I know. I've been there before. That's usually right. I think that's right before I tried to kill myself as a teenager. When you feel like there's nobody that understands you and there is nothing that can be done about it. And that is a desolate place. And if you're there and you're listening to this, I highly recommend getting yourself into some kind of therapy immediately, because that's a really, really, really dark place to be in. And it's very hard to get yourself out of that hole. And I always think of the prayer of Saint Francis. Hold on, make me an instrument of your peace. It's such a great prayer. And I think helps me get out of my own head. Hold on, let me find these words. I just love these words. God damn it, why is nothing up when I want it? It's a Catholic prayer. It's the prayer of St. Francis, the patron saint of animals. This guy, St. Francis is one of my favorites. He's a big self-flagellator. He wore hair shirts. And he was so Christ-obsessed that he would preach to birds and animals. And absolutely one of my favorite Catholic saints. But anyway, if you are feeling isolated, I remember when I was deeply, deeply emotionally isolated. I was 14 years old. I was in ninth grade, really suicidal, had nowhere to turn to. My parents were just fucking, you know, come on, savages. And I had no one to turn to. Even my peers, your other 14-year-old friends don't know what to tell you. All they can tell you is, yeah, your parents suck. But unfortunately, I did not have adults around me to reach out to. I did have one adult, one teacher who could see the sadness in me. And she said this great piece of advice. She goes, you know, are you sleeping? And I say, no. And she says, well, just try to go to bed a half hour earlier than you normally would. Sleep helps. And she said, watch television. Just have the TV on. And that's when I started watching Beverly Hills 90210. That helps, right? Little things like that help. And sometimes you're physically isolated. Some of you might be listening to this. You might be stationed somewhere. You might be sitting alone somewhere in some weird part of the world. We've all been there too, I think, when you're in another country and you don't know anybody, and that can be hard. But the familiar always helps, right? TV shows, music, books, stuff like that. If you cannot actually find a human being, which is obviously the first choice, find a human being to talk to. They exist. The world is nothing but people. Surely one of them has to get it, right? And if you can't do that, there's this great line in St. Francis' prayer. Make me an instrument of your peace. Lord, make me an instrument of your peace. Where there is hatred, let me sow love. Where there is injury, pardon. Where there is doubt, faith. Where there is despair, hope. Where there is darkness, light. Where there is sadness, joy. Now, this is the part I love. O Divine Master, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to consoled, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. For it is in giving that we receive, it is in pardoning that we are pardoned, it is in dying that we are born again to eternal life. Wow. Here's why I love this. He's asking, grant that I may not so much seek to be consoled as to console, to be understood as to understand, to be loved as to love. The point being, you know, isolation, part of that comes from the desperate need to be seen and to be understood. And I totally get it. I understand completely that need. But also, the way out of that is to be brave, is to have the courage to look to the others, to look to people around you, and not try so hard to be understood, but to understand other people. And in doing so, that kind of bridges that isolation gap in a weird way. So to answer your question, Mr. Emailer, Cameron, do you have to reach out to other people? And to get over loneliness, a lot of that has to do with no one's going to understand me. I am this island, but I think it's an understanding the other, getting us outside of ourselves is what helps that feeling a little bit, you know? Because I think at the end of the day, it's like, how come no one gets me and this and that? And you know what? I don't know if anybody's ever really going to get you 1,000%. You know, in my life, my husband gets me. I have a handful of friends excuse me, but you know, where is there another person out there who was raised by two Hungarian lunatics, who parents divorced, one grew up isolated with a mentally ill mom in the exact same way I was? I don't know. And I think we all carry a little piece of that, feeling different than other people. I think all of us feel isolated. So it isn't only reaching out and to not seek to be understood so much as to understand the other, that we can kind of get over our own stuff and see a therapist. So there's social isolation, and that's when people kind of willingly retreat, and I totally get that. But that's like having no social relationships, and that's considered unhealthy when people spend excessive time alone. particularly when they no longer benefit from time spent alone. It's staying home for days and days, not talking to people, avoiding eye contact. I think I've done that. I think, like I said, day three is when I venture out. Day three is when I break down and I go to the Comedy Store. But some of you listening might go, hey, I don't know, am I a weirdo because I like to be alone? Am I a socially isolated person because I enjoy spending time? No. But here's what you may not know about yourself. And for many years, I didn't understand this about myself. Like, why do I get so drained hanging out with like a party or something like that? I don't feel energized when I hang out with other people. I feel very tired. And for years, I thought something was wrong with me. But it wasn't until a friend of mine who studied psychology said to go online and take the Myers-Briggs test. That's MEYERSBRIGGS. Myers-Briggs. There's like a million free tests. It'll take you totally like 5 minutes. Take this test and see, you might be an introvert. You might be the kind of person who benefits from a little bit of social isolation from time to time. And that doesn't mean that you're an unhealthy hermit who, needs a lot of help. It just means that maybe your constitution is such that you can't handle a lot of stimulation all the time. And that's kind of where I'm at, bros. I can't take it a lot. I got to go home to my cave and like pet my dogs and chill the fuck out. So yeah, that's what I have for you. Social isolation. Yeah, most of the time you're an introvert. But then there's people that are hermits. And I wanted to look up a great hermit clip for you so that you could, I'm fascinated by the idea of the hermit, the person that just completely goes away from society and just like lives in the forest somewhere in like a mud hut. I love that idea because I think in religion, that's considered a fairly normal thing, to go off and to find Christ or Buddha or whatever it is. You know, the early Christian fathers did a lot of that wacky stuff, like the desert fathers, like people that just went out and laid in the desert and scorched their bodies to find God, or find Christ rather. Oh my gosh, fucking weirdos. But yeah, a little bit time to time is good. And I hear you, bro. I hear you. I'm sorry that you're dealing with this. I know everybody's lonely, man. And I think that's a normal thing too. I think feeling loneliness from time to time is a very, very normal thing. But isolation, that's not normal. That needs help. You need to get some help. If it lasts for a long time, I think. But yeah, fuck. There you go, man. Make me an instrument of your peace, St. Francis prayer. I always think about that when I'm feeling very sorry for myself, feeling very lonely. Actually, what I do when I start to feel, you know, because my husband leaves town for a long time, for like 4 or 5 days to do stand-up sometimes, and I'm alone. And like I said, by day three, I get cagey. And I go, you know, I don't want to have someone in my house talking to me, but I wouldn't mind a little bit of interaction. And that's when I go to my tribe. That's when I go to the Comedy Store. I talk to some people. I hang out. I feel good. I come home. I'm a balanced girl. That's the key. You got to find your tribe. Find the people that do get you. That's like 90% of it, man. It's just finding people that get it, that get somewhat. Like I said, you're never going to get someone that's like, I completely understand everything, everything about you. It's probably impossible, but you're going to have pretty good percentages. People that kind of get, for the most part, get it, get the bigger it. You got to find your tribe. You got to find your tribe, especially gay people, man. I have anything. I can't obviously speak on it, but from what I understand, I lived in San Francisco for many years, and I met many men and women who came from horrible small town existences. And you got to find your Mecca. I never understood. I saw some documentary about these gay women living in like Arkansas or Oklahoma or just somewhere like that. And they were living in such an intolerant town, and the townspeople hated them, you know, were calling them names and like threatening to shut down their business. And all I can think is like, why the fuck? Why are you staying there? Why would you stay where you're not even tolerated? You know, like Oprah says, right? Go where you're celebrated, not where you're tolerated. Why would you stay somewhere where they fucking hate you? Where they fucking hate you? You gotta go. You gotta go. You gotta be brave. Oh, motherfuck. Man, this whole time I've been yammering and I didn't even talk about my favorite isolationists. Can we talk about the fucking Duggars for a minute? Holy mother. Now that's the result of some isolation with this political stuff I was talking about earlier, of this whole, I do me, you do you. I do what I want, you do what you want, leave me alone. This is one of the extremely negative repercussions of social political isolation. And let the record show that I have hated the Duggars long before any of this crap came out, long before it was hip to hate the Duggars. Christina P. Pajitsky hated the Duggars. Go ahead and Google it. 19 Kids and Counting, Christina Pajitsky. I had a bit that was recorded at the Laugh Factory where I shit on these lunatics back in like 08 or 09, bros. You know, and I hated these people for, I hated these people early on for one thing. 19 Kids, it, to me, is completely immoral. I mean, it's completely lunacy to have a litter of children that you cannot possibly care for. And I mean, I'm not talking physical needs. I am talking emotional, spiritual, psychological needs. This poor woman, this broodmare of a woman. Listen, and it's one thing if you're an adult, you and Jim Bob, what's her fucking name? Everybody's got a J name, and the Jebediah and Jessup and Jenna and Gina and you know, it's one thing if the wacky lady and Jim Bob want to believe in their nutbag religion, their Quiverful. Do you know what these people believe? The Quiverful movement is the belief that, first of all, it's totally medieval. It's totally archaic. The woman's barefoot and pregnant, pumping out kids for Jim Bob's sacred sperm. The idea being that they will create essentially their own tribe, their own like master race of Christian nutbags that will populate the earth, take over, and infiltrate government. Seriously. Seriously. That's what these people wanted to, that's what they are doing. By pumping out child after child after child. And then those children's children are now pumping out children, childs, and children's. And that was my first problem with the Duggars. But what's really neat is when they started coming out and being hateful towards gay people. Hey, that was fun. You know, because I don't hate all Christians. Obviously, there's decent Christians, but it's douchebags like this that make normal Christians look terrible. But what's really cool is the sexual abuse now happening, you know, and hey, do you think it's healthy for kids to not watch television or wear jeans or be able to interact with members of the opposite sex or even look at members of the opposite sex outside of the ones existing in their homes? Do you think that would lead to something like, oh, I don't know, sexual abuse in the home? Unbelievable. And the best part is that this douchebag, this Joshua kid who was sexually abusing his own siblings, they sent him to go work with some friend. They're like, well, we're not going to call the cops just yet. We're going to make you go do roofing for a summer with some friend of the family, and he's just going to talk to you. That was the guy's penance. And then no mention is made of how to deal with the girls because, you know, they're asking for it, right? They must have been taunting their brother with their dirty pillows and their you know, very sexy denim nightgowns, I'm sure, that they're wearing, their kooky shoes, homemade clothes. It's so repulsive. It's so... I hate these people for so long. I can't even begin. Yeah, but no mention of how the girls are doing. Just that he's being dealt with. A year later, they call the cops. Great. 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 And that is the result of isolation. That's the whole problem. That's the whole problem of like, not my problem. You do you, I do me. Yeah, well, how's that working out for us? How's that working out? The fucking Duggars, man. They ruin everything. It's the far right, man. It's getting nuttier and nuttier and nuttier. Nuts. Nuts. The Duggars are socially isolated, and that's what happens. Not to say that happens in all groups, although we are finding out that the Amish are kind of kooky now, right? All those reality shows. Cameron, Mormons, weird. All right. On that note, let's start our own cult. I think we should have a place to live somewhere in Hawaii or Tahiti, where just people that like this show live together. There's no rules. We just talk. We have cool conversations, bros. All right. So that's it for this week. Listen, if you're feeling isolated, if you're feeling lonely, know that that is completely normal. I don't know why people don't talk about this stuff more. It's so annoying. It's so annoying, right? It's totally normal. Reach out, man. Reach out. Email me. Fucking your mom. Not your mom's. God damn it. That's DeepBroPodcast@gmail.com. Find your tribe. I know it's hard sometimes. If you're a gay person, go to the gay bar in your neighborhood. Go find the community that you belong to. You know, just find somebody to talk to that makes sense to you. And and listen to this show more. Okay. I'm going to go for a walk now out in the sunlight. I do that once every few days. And I'm going to enjoy that. So, okay, guys, until next week, that's been Deep Bro. And I thank you for listening. Thank you for downloading all these episodes. And I will see you. I will see you next week. Okay. Stay black, everybody. Bye-bye.
Now what? I don't know. Philosophize with us.
It's Christina P, a.k.a. Miss Jeans. This ain't your mom's house. It's a different theme. Gotta be critically thinking. Like you caught up at a cocktail party. Our thoughts start to sink in. John Locke, or was it Socrates? Aristotle or Plato, maybe Hippocrates. Got us talking all properly, topically. Just a comedian discussing these philosophies. Serious questions, silly people. What's that? What's that? That's Teeth, bro.
It is the ultimate metaphor for life, and you know what that is?
What?
That's deep, bro. That's deep, bro. That's deep, bro. That's deep, bro.